Thanks for that. Would you also thank Ken for that? For filling in the time so well. That if Jerry, if you'd like to come up, we'll get going with Jerry's session. Jerry's from EducationAU and is going to be talking about innovation to support lifelong learning and the benefits for Australia.
So I think I was introduced as going to talk about something about innovation and e-portfolios for lifelong learning. I'm not sure that that's really true. I don't think I am going to talk much about innovation. Some of the things that I'm proposing I think have been done and well and truly covered by many, many people. I'm more proposing around adoption, and that's time to be doing some things at the moment. My background is in relation to e-portfolios. I guess I'm a lifelong learner, I'm not an educator. And I'm going to come at it from that perspective a bit, even though part of this is about a report that I helped to write, which looked at e-portfolios beyond education and training, and I'll get into that in a minute. But yesterday, I was asked by Graham from Deere, I'm not sure if he's still here, but he was saying, there's a lot of work being done around e-portfolios with the roadmap. We're doing some really great stuff on verification, portability, ownership, privacy, access control, infrastructure and the rest of it. But what's your vision for e-portfolios? And it's a really good question. And my vision for e-portfolios, quite simply, is e-portfolios for all. And I've copied that vision. It's not my original one. The Netherlands are doing that quite well, for example. But I believe that everyone should have the right to an e-portfolio, and that service should be available to them, no matter where they're from. And that's something that's important. And while everyone doesn't necessarily need to have one, or they don't have to have one, it should be forced upon them, if they would choose to exercise that right, then that service should be available to them. So that's the angle that I'm coming at. So, what I'm going to do is really talk about some work that we did. There's a bunch of reports for DEWA called the SICK test reports. Now, someone asked me what SICK test means the other day, and it's Strategic ICT Advisory Service. It was a terrible acronym, but we produced a series of reports that looked at emerging technologies or newer technologies or technologies that we're just starting to use that may have been around for a while, and how they can be applied in various aspects of education and training. We were really concerned with e-portfolios and how they are being used and how they're being perceived, because there's quite a few people in the room here at the moment, and everyone's probably got their own opinion of what, or the definition of what an e-portfolio is. They've got many and varied uses, and you talk to two people, there'll be two different opinions. You talk to 10, there'll be 10. But what we want to concentrate on is how they are being used, or if they're being used beyond formal education and training environments, and how they can support the needs of people outside formal educational institutions. The next part of my presentation is really better support for lifelong learners, and I have a particular interest in the ACE sector. That's not because I'm part of the ACE sector, I'm not, but I'm a student in the ACE sector, and I'd like to see some better services in that for myself. What we did in terms of the research, we looked at how e-portfolios are being used beyond formal education and training, and there's a number of different areas that you can see that are up there where they're being used. When we started this research, it was at the height of the global financial crisis, and the economy facing a massive change in employment conditions was something that was very concerning to us. So supporting workers facing redundancy was something that we were really keen to find out more about. How e-portfolios are being used in career development, workforce development and planning. There's a lot of work being done in continuing professional development. My interest, lifelong learning, and there's other uses there. Developing competencies within ICT, I think is an interesting one, because that crops up quite often. And I saw a great example yesterday. It's the hairdressing one where a lady thought she was doing a course in teaching or hairdressing or something like that, but she was learning about ICT because using the use of e-portfolios. And that seems to be something that pops up quite a bit, that gaining competencies with ICT while you might be doing something else. The way we went about this research, we did a lot of desktop research. We were really searching through the web, and then we were trying to find, if you like, large-scale regional e-portfolio providers. and seeing if we could organise teleconferences or hooking up with them on Skype or something like that, so that we could talk to the people behind it and find out what sort of successes they were having, if they were having any, what measures for success. Because if we were going to propose something about large-scale or regional e-portfolio implementations in Australia, we need some evidence. We need to show that that they are working. I'm referring this a little as the e-portfolio epidemic. Now, e-portfolios are well established, I think, in educational institutions, but our brief was a little bit beyond that. And we found that non-institution e-portfolios, they fit into two categories. There's industry-specific ones and there's regional ones. Now, industry-specific ones, there's lots of them around. There's some great ones over the last couple of days, and today in particular, there's been some really great talks about some of the industry-specific e-portfolio implementations that are starting to appear. Regional ones are a little bit harder for us. Looking at large-scale ones that have been around for a little while, there are not too many of them. In the e-portfolio epidemic, I guess there's been some outbreaks mainly in Europe, the UK, New Zealand, Australia, parts of the US. And we weren't able to find too many others. That's not to say that they're not there, but we, in the work that we've done in particularly parts of Northeast Asia, we've found that maybe there's some cultural issues, and I think that was alluded to earlier this morning about the practice of reflection and making that public. It's not something that sits well, not just within parts of our own community, but very definitely other communities. We're also conscious as well, one of the other things that affects our work, and our non-native English speaking colleagues remind us of this a lot, is that trawling through the web has got a very definite bias towards the English web. It's really hard to find stuff that's happening in other countries where the web maybe is not English or not, the search engines don't particularly support it that well for us. So there's probably two reasons why we couldn't find too many of these other regional portfolios. The ones that we were able to find that have been around for a while, and I'll talk in a bit more detail about Careers Wales, but Netcar in the Netherlands was one of specific interest to us, and I'll talk about that. But that was a region that was facing turmoil in terms of downsizing in a major employer for a specific region. And the types of strategies that they thought they would be good to put together to get around that and to work their way through it. So Career Wales, this is probably the largest implementation that we've been able to find. It's part of the Welsh Government's commitment to lifelong learning. They've got an agenda there. It has over 250,000 users on it. Now that might not seem a lot to maybe a country our size or a larger economy still. However, that represents all of their high school students go through that process in around year nine. So they've got a captive audience. They're starting off what will be a lifelong e-portfolio through their career development part of their curriculum, which is quite interesting. I see that as being a great way of capturing users and starting a user community. But even so, they're putting all of their students through. That student population only represents about 75 to 80% of the total number of users. So they've got, for them, a significant number of people from the adult population of workers who are actually using their service. And they had some great challenges around that. I'll have a look at that shortly. MyFuture, which is, if you like, Australia's semi-equivalent to the Careers Wales initiative, is our career information and guidance service. Now that provides some really good information on what vocations there are, what jobs there are, where they might be, what courses there might be to help you get there, and it's got a really great planning facility called My Guide, which enables you go through a fairly structured process, setting out your aspirations, what interests you have, what skills you may have, but it doesn't go any further. You develop a career plan, but then you don't get the opportunity to store evidence or present it to anyone in any effective manner in the way that you would with a fully functional e-portfolio service. But something around e-portfolio findings there from the research. The JISC in the UK is another excellent source of research into e-portfolios. They've released a paper called Effective Use of E-Portfolios, which looks at it from different practitioners' angles, so maybe as a learner, as an organisation, as a teaching professional and so on, that's a route of continuing professional development. They fund a number of research projects, pilot projects, and I think one of the things that we like to take from that is we need to be doing more of that in our country to look at the localised conditions here where we may be facing some different challenges to them around remoteness or access or whatever it might be, but that's something that we need to do. We need to understand parts of this e-portfolio problem a bit better than what we do currently. Looking at the Careers Wales site, what I like about this one is they've broken it down into different age groups, so or different life stages of your career, which is quite useful. And they've also, if you look across the top, they've got some new, quite different user interfaces. So Year 9's doing their personal learning plan. They've got a very different interface to someone who may be in the middle of their career and is looking to make a career change or is faced with a forced career change. So the interface is quite different, but the services underlying are the same, which is really important. They've got this great thing called facing redundancy, which is really quite important as well. What I like about this one is they've got a link to it, and there's some more information on it, but it's all in the same place. It's all part of the Careers Wales space. So what's circled there is an e-progress file or a CV wizard, so where you can go and create a resume, build your e-portfolio, but it uses the same service. What we tend to have here is fairly fractured services. So there's a great initiative, for example, by Job Services Australia, which is looking at workers who are facing redundancy, have been hit with it, and they're trying to develop them an employment pathway program, which is like an e-portfolio, but it's out there on its own, and it's in the social welfare space. And if you're a lifelong learner, maybe that's not the right space to store your lifelong portfolio, because once you're out of that particular circumstance, you might not really want to go back to that one to keep working on your portfolio. So let's have it all in one place for everyone, I think. My Future, this looks a little bit at the structuring behind career planning. There was some talk before in earlier presentations around the process of ePortfolio. There's debates about whether to template or not to template. Should it be a free-range thing, or do you need to provide a lot of structure? Well, in certain areas, I think you do need to provide some structure. Career planning might be one of them. I'm not sure how clear that is, but if you have a look up there, there's a lot of stuff that goes on in the process of reflection and trying to work out your career plan. So that guide offers some structure and some really useful tools towards solving that particular aspect of an e-portfolio related program. On to workforce development and planning. E-Folio Minnesota is probably the second largest implementation we found, and that's an implementation that's available to all residents of the state of Minnesota, whether they're students, teachers, professionals. That's had quite an adoption in colleges and schools. One of the interesting findings out of that one was that they haven't got complete coverage across all their schools and colleges, but what they have found through interviewing and working with mobile students who may go from one college to another quite frequently, because there are some areas of high mobility in that area, is that if the students have been engaged and working in a college or a school that's got the portfolio and they've embedded it into their practice the way they teach, like fully embedded into their curriculum, then they move to a school that hasn't got it, they're feeling really left out. It's really, they've adopted that style of learning, they've become used to it, and when they go to something that hasn't, they're feeling really left out. So it was just a bit of an aside for what's happening there in some situations. As a measure of success for the Minnesota one, it's really hard to find good longitudinal studies on how effective e-portfolios are, because I think when most people use e-portfolios, it's usually around transitions. You might be thinking about moving on, or you might be faced with moving on, like you weren't thinking about it, but now you are. But we tend to go to our e-portfolios, our resumes, or whatever they may be, when we're faced with transition. So if you're looking at it from a lifelong learning perspective, you need to look at it over a long period of time. If you're looking at just one transition, was it useful then? Well, yeah, maybe it wasn't. But two or three or four or five, then I think you start to build up some better evidence of whether they actually work or not. So we needed, longitudinal studies were out because we had to find some other ways of gauging the effectiveness of these implementations. One is usage in terms of just web usage. Is it going up? Is the user base increasing, and are they coming back to it to the extent that you can measure that over a short period of time? But also adoption from other places. So the Minnesota initiative, for example, I think is being picked up in California, which is an extremely large economy on its own. It's a very big rollout for them. I think there's another one coming up in a province in Canada. And they've got a lot of other interests. So people are picking up on this around the world. And this is just one particular type of e-portfolio application. Interestingly, with this one, they don't consider social networking to be part of the e-portfolio, or at least they didn't when we were talking to them. The Netherlands, Towards the Future That Works. There was a report that was released on, I think it was a Dutch Committee on Labour Market Reform, where they came up with the idea e-portfolio for all. That's where I stole that little vision from. And I think it's a really good one. But the Netcar implementation was the one that I was talking about before, where there was a rapid downturn. Netcar was a major employer in the automotive industry in the Netherlands. And they needed to retrench quite a large number of workers, at least for that size region. Now that had dire effects on the immediate surrounding economy. So they needed to come up with strategies to try and minimise the effect that was going to have. They were moving from an employment economy to an ad hoc project economy. So the nature of employment was changing within that region. So that they set some goals. The goals were to have a flexible, mobile, transparent labour market. And they implemented a number of strategies to do that. One of them was an e-portfolio. Along that, they had a number of goals they needed to achieve within that. And some of the things that they were trying to do as they shifted to that ad hoc project economy, so they wanted better matching with vacancies, they wanted certification of competencies, so they need to identify what those competencies were within those workers, support for HR, there's massive HR impact, better matching with training opportunities and facilitating lifelong learning. So those are some of the things that they use their e-portfolio for. We're interested to know what we can learn from that implementation because in my state at least we've faced some massive redundancies too in the automotive industry. So was there anything that we could learn from Netcar that we could have maybe applied more effectively here? It would have been something interesting. There may be some people in the room who might even be familiar with Mitsubishi and what happened there and some of the strategies that were put forward. I'd really be interested to find more about that. So what I'd like to do now is switch to the second part of this talk, and that's really how e-portfolios may be able to assist lifelong learners. And my definition of a lifelong learner is really someone who may not have any active affiliation with an educational institution like a TAFE or a university, but they're still learners and they're still out there. So I've picked on someone who has a degree. That degree was completed in the mid-1990s, it predates the internet. They've got no electronic evidence, they've got a piece of paper somewhere. They've been working for a long time, 20 years, I said. Over that time, they've done many PD courses. This person used to work in the IT industry, so had a lot of training in various information technologies, but there's no evidence of that either. As an adult learner, they've done, well, at least 8 courses with one ACE provider, WA in South Australia. They're currently part way through their 8th one and they've enrolled in another. So over that period of time, there's only one piece of evidence. I should say, I should ask this question is, if they've enrolled for 8 times in a WA course, how many student IDs do you think they've got? Any? Well, 7. They enrolled for 2 courses in one go. It was me. So I have very little evidence to show for all of that work, and I've done a number of other things as well, but in fact, that's my evidence. It wasn't provided by them, but I know at least in principle maybe how to handle a boat, but I don't really, it's a theoretical example. Anyway, that's my evidence for that. Now, alongside that, are there any RPLSSs in the room? Still? There were a couple that I was hoping to pick on. This is my box of evidence. And I'd like to have a job in e-learning. And if you have a close look at that, there is absolutely nothing to do with e-learning at all. It may be some bits and pieces about project management. There's a degree in there, completely irrelevant. And there's some company certifications there. Neither of those two companies exist anymore, and that's not atypical for someone who's been working for 20-odd years. So I'm really interested in what an e-portfolio could do for me, I do have a natural interest in technology and the web anyway, but I think maybe there's something that e-portfolios can offer those of us who partially predate the internet and now use it quite a bit. I also have a web presence. You can find out quite a bit about me on the web, you might be able to, but certainly not all of me. I don't have any portfolio on the web, and don't confuse me with other Jerry Leesons, if there are any. There are. But can you verify the accuracy of what you find on the web if you're looking at me? You also might like to, if I'm presenting for a job, you're considering employing me, you also might like to consider out the legality of what you're doing if you're searching for me on the web. It may be illegal. There's also a lot of stuff missing there, and I have no control over the web. So processes that support reflection from an e-portfolio perspective as well can be quite difficult from an individual outside of an institution with no support. Just looking at those legal implications for at least Australians maybe in the room may be conversant with this, but the Privacy Act actually says that you have to inform candidates that they've collected personal information about you and how they're going to use that. So if you're considering hiring someone, and we've all heard stories about looking up people on Facebook and seeing what they did on Saturday night, well, you can't use that to judge someone when you're hiring. You could get into trouble, but I don't know how anyone could prove that you did that anyway. To some extent, it's pretty hard to prove. But they also may be an active blogger or Twitter, and they might do something like say how they've been involved in some sort of exercising a workplace right, so some sort of workers' compensation. You can't use that against them if you find it. So it's not just employees or job candidates who really need to be conversant about how they use the web. It's employers as well. People who are doing the hiring need to understand what their rights and obligations are as well. So maybe the web isn't such a good place for employers to be researching candidates. Maybe it is, I'm not sure, but there are some things that you need to consider. Some other problems. If you're outside of formal institutions, then what might be lacking in an e-portfolio? Well, depends on what your intent is, but the e-portfolio process is not one that's necessarily easy. Collecting, selecting, reflecting, reflection in particular, I think, can be difficult if it's going to be used. And support. Support's really important. Institutions are able to offer a lot of support, but other places aren't. In saying all of this, don't dismiss the cloud. There's some great services out there, and we've seen some today that you can use really quite effectively. Insidious design. There was a great article that came out last week from a college professor, I think, in the United States called Insidious Pedagogy. And what that was saying is having a bit of a go at course management systems. None of the ones that are out there, I'm sure, they're fantastic. Maybe there's Blackboard out there, I don't know. But what they were saying there is that the way that your course management system may be implemented will affect the way that teaching and learning teaching is delivered. A lot of the course management systems come from a paradigm that's maybe instructivist. Now, when I start talking about pedagogy, it's with all the authority of someone who's looked up the name on Wikipedia. So, I don't know a lot about it. But anyway, course management systems, they can be quite instructivist in their approach. And this was an American article, so if you're typically, say, a 50-year-old professor in a college and you're told to start using the course management system now, you'll bring a whole lot of stuff that you have and apply some instructive approach, try to fit that into this new system, this online delivery that you've got to do. Newer course management systems like Moodle, for example, are more constructivist in their approach. But I'm saying that some of the older ones that have been around for a while as well, they've all adapted as well, and they've got some great collaborative features. You can do some really good things with it. But that behaviour may not be the default behaviour of the course management system. And the default behaviour is what people tend to stick with. If they may be experts in their subject matter, but they don't necessarily know how to deliver online in an effective way. So they'll pick up the defaults, and they may not be appropriate in your particular circumstance. What I'd say is we need to consider that if we're going to pick up an e-portfolio piece of software as well. Have a look at the design of that. Does it do the scaffolding you need to do? Is it as free as you need to do? Whatever it might be. Sharing. Now, I think this is an interesting one as well. Someone talked before about sharing and how you open up parts of yourself and make that public within communities of practice, communities of interest. I think communities of trust is something that's important, because you're more likely to open up in a community of trust than you are in a community of interest. You can have shared interests but not trust. Google Juice is an important one as well. If you're going to put something on the web, if you're going to have a web presence, you want it to be found. So you need a service that's going to be easily found and easily discoverable. Challenges for lifelong learners. Where do I start in the process of reflection can be quite difficult. Is it intuitive for all of us, or is it easy to do? I'm not too sure about that. But it certainly presents design and support challenges for us. Support, again, is something that I can't emphasise enough. You do need some support. And that's what came through in our research when we looked at these large-scale regional implementations, particularly around careers, career development, supporting workers. As they use the e-portfolios, so some of the really effective ones, like the Welsh one, they've got a whole support network of careers advisors that people can get in contact with, as well as just having an electronic component. Multiple portfolios over time. This is where I've become a big fan of things like Mahara. We will end up with having many multiple portfolios. I don't think there's one e-portfolio solution for all by any stretch. And there are organisations, universities. There's a university in London that has at least two e-portfolios for the students. One that provides system sort of functionality, the business, the stuff that the organisation needs to do its work. And the other is a lifelong learning portfolio for the learners to use independently of that. Now, whether they could marry that up into one system, or I'll have two, I'm not too sure, or three or four. But they recognise that there's institutional needs and there's learner needs that may be a little different. That's important. And if you are going to have those multiple portfolios, how do you move stuff from one environment to another? And as I was saying, this is where I've become a fan of Mahara and what they're doing with the LEAP specification. I think there's been a few mentions of interoperability before, but there are some technical specifications around that support e-portfolios, and they are very, in the main, they're quite difficult to implement if you're a developer. The LEAP specification offers a lot more potential there, and it's fantastic to see something like the Mahara project pick that up. Stuff just disappears, online and in the cupboard. I had a very paltry set of certificates that my wife and I dug around with on the weekend to try and find. Some was in a cupboard, some was in a box underneath the house. But it disappears on the web as well. Web services come and go. How do you manage that? What's really good to see is that these are some of the things that the framework's starting to tackle, or is tackling, those things they talked about before around portability, access, and that. So it's really pleasing to see that we're getting some advice and guidance on how to go about that. On a national scale, I really want to focus a little bit on the A sector. A sector is doing some great things with community-based education. It does stuff for the community, the individual. It also increases to the human capital of the nation. There's some really interesting figures. It's very hard to measure. For me, it was pretty hard to measure just how big and what an impact the ACE sector is having. But I read two articles. One was in 2006, there were 1,027 providers catalogued by an exercise from the Adult Learners Association. Over 55% of them were registered training providers. They were providing vocational courses. That's a significant number, very significant number. I read another report that said there's over 1,200 of them out there, and over 770 of them are providing VET or vocational courses. So they're having a big impact. They are a very big impact. What can we do to support lifelong learners in the ACE sector? Well, I think Ken kind of solved that problem for me a little bit before. Thanks, Ken, that TAFE VC is offering an e-portfolio service. But I think that's something that's really important. We do need to consider that. I guess the final thing that I'd really like to say is, in summing up, that I think I've seen some fantastic things that we're doing as educational institutions in providing e-portfolio services. Flexible Learning Framework is doing some fantastic stuff around e-portfolios. But back to my vision, what can we do for lifelong learners? Those of us who are in and out of education, we don't have a formal, if you like, affiliation. Would an e-portfolio service benefit? I think it would. Pathways into VET is an obvious one, I think. Collecting information that can be used to provide pathways into the VET sector or from ACE to higher education would be great. I'd also like to say that in terms of what's out there, this isn't new. There's stuff being done in, say, Minnesota, California. We've heard other mentions during the day. Parts of Canada, New Zealand's doing some great stuff across the Tasman. I'm really interested to see what the lifelong learning one was, because it's great to see tertiary students and school students having access to a lifelong learning portfolio, but there's another very large learning population out there as well. The Welsh, the Netherlands, the Scottish, they're all out there. I think it's time that we were able to offer some sort of a lifelong learning e-portfolio service for our learners as well. That's it. Oh, questions.
Any questions?